Chapter 9. Surrender. And Mary said, "Behold, the handmaid of the Lord, be it unto me according to thy word." And the angel departed from her. Gabriel departed from her, having delivered his message and receiving the response of surrender that he desired. Mary remained immersed in the celestial glory of the afterglow of the presence of the great archangel that Gabriel left behind him. She experienced an overwhelming sense of wonder and glory. Under the overpowering influence of that heavenly atmosphere, Mary had no other inclination except to surrender herself entirely unto the will of the King of Heaven. Many times, God lifts a soul into high peaks of spiritual experiences and brings it into such a sense of celestial atmosphere that the human will becomes melted into a liquid pool of surrender. God requires the human will to surrender to Him in specific obedience in order that He might do His will in His way. God well knows that a surrendered mortal might desire to change his mind in the midst of the means God must use. But God, having gained permission from the will, does not renege from his purposes. God needs a voluntary surrender of the human will, because when the Creator gave a will to man, he made it to be inviolate. Regardless of the pressures placed upon that will, it cannot be violated by any outside source. It must be voluntarily surrendered before it can take any action. No created being in earth, heaven, or hell can violate the human will, and God can but will not violate it. However, people can, and often do, put such pressure upon a person that he passes his individual point of resistance and surrenders. Nevertheless, in some individuals, the resistance is so great that they will die rather than surrender. Once God has obtained the heart surrender of the will, which will be registered in the books of heaven, God will then proceed with the means necessary to accomplish his good and perfect will. When Mary spoke those beautiful words of surrender, she released the angel to return to his own kind and to the king that had sent him. The cross. The cross had been in the heart of God for countless eons. Long before the foundations of the world were laid, the eternal omniscience knew before creation that Jesus, the God-man, would be born on earth in the form and nature of man. He was sent with the express purpose to give his life as a blood sacrifice and ransom for the sins of many. The cross had been an immeasurable pain in God's heart ever since his plan of redemption had been perfected in the counsels of God in eternity past. Every sacrifice, every animal slain for the remission of sins since the Garden of Eden was a fresh reminder to God of the eternal Lamb that will be slain most brutally in the appointed time and place. And that appointed time had arrived for his eternity-dividing advent for the Adamic race. 1 Peter 1:19. But with the precious blood of Christ, as of a lamb without blemish and without spot, who verily was foreordained before the foundation of the world, but was manifest at these last times for you. The first step in preparing for the arrival of Emmanuel, the Son of God, was to procure the freely surrendered will of the chosen young virgin, Mary of Nazareth, a young woman who knew no man and had known no shame in her life. She it was who had become the virgin mother of God's Son, according to the plan that had been foretold by the prophets. "Be it unto me according to thy word," her astounded heart responded. With those words, Mary laid down her will and accepted the will of God. And then and there, the cross, that dwelt in the heart of God, mysteriously, silently, and unannounced, powerfully entered Mary's heart through that one and only door of surrender. God is always true and faithful, and even that moment of surrender, Mary was given to know and understand the words of Gabriel correctly. She had no doubt what Gabriel's words meant. She knew that she would be facing unmerited cruelty and opprobrium from all of her neighbors and friends. When the angel had left her, she sat alone in the afterglow of his celestial presence. She said to herself in a tone of self-mockery, "Which of my friends will ever believe me if I tell them that an angel appeared to me and told me such unheard of things? They will all believe that I am lying or crazy, or, oh no." She blushed at the very thought of what they would think. "Who? No, no one will believe me or believe that I am innocent and still a virgin when this really happens to me." But now, Mary had given her word of surrender to the angel, and surrendered she would remain. Mary, and Mary alone, was certain that the utterly impossible would miraculously happen. Gabriel's words were absolutely true. She had no doubt that everything he said was true. It was not possible at that time for the teenage lass to anticipate how fully the cross of Christ would be planted in her mother's heart, nor could she even guess the unimaginable pain that had already lodged in the child's father's heart for such a very long time. "An angel came to me." The glorious, creating Holy Spirit did come to her that night of impenetrable mystery, and the Spirit of life filled her whole being with the glory of his ineffable presence. Silently, miraculously, he created within her womb that holy seed. In the secret of her own body, she knew that new life had begun within her. She was caught up in a maelstrom of emotion, joy, fear, wonder, and hope. Pain and sadness took turns of mastery. Fear and anxiety fluttered about her head like bats. Then the thoughts of what really had happened made her rejoice with the uplifting assurance of faith arising in her heart. It was not long, however, before the glory of that ineffable experience in the Holy Spirit began to fade and take its place in her library of memories. All too soon, the time of grief and pain and multiplied sorrows inevitably approached. The realization of the actuality of the tremendous issues of life that faced her rolled over her mind like stormy waves rolling onto the shore of the Sea of Galilee. She dreaded telling Joseph, her promised husband, she loved with all her orphaned heart, the things that had happened to her. Big, strong, honest, gentle Joseph. A man who lived upright, keeping the law. One that was proud of his heritage and lineage from David, even though he was only the village carpenter. Surely, she thought, even though no one else will believe me, my beloved Joseph will understand and believe my amazing experiences. Mary's encounter with the angel and the visitation upon her of the Holy Spirit was so real and wonderful, she assumed that Joseph would accept it as willingly as she did. And yet, she trembled in doubt as the unwelcome thought stabbed her mind. And yet, if he didn't believe her, what would she do? How then could she convince him? Would he think her an adulteress, unfaithful to him, insulting and defiling him, and a brazen liar? One who would tell such a lie right to his face? Would he despise and hate her and put her away, or worse, turn her over to the local magistrates? And they would take her out and stone her. Every day, every hour, her heart cried out its fears and anxieties to God as she pleaded desperately for his help. Inevitably, the dreaded day advanced ever nearer. She could not put it off much longer. If she waited too long, the gossips would find out, and then Joseph would find out about her from evil, spiteful sources. She could not stand for her Joseph to be hurt that way. No, she could not wait any longer. She must take courage and faith and go to her beloved Joseph and tell him her whole story. But will my Joseph believe me? She harassed herself with a question. I bear God's baby. One evening, after the day's work in the carpenter shop was over, Mary determined to go and tell him, praying desperately in her heart. While it pounded noisily, she came and knocked softly on his door. Joseph had already sat down to his simple evening meal of bread and cheese and wine. He was sitting on his stool with a soft light from the oil lamp illuminating his meal, surprised, but truly pleased at the unusual visit of Mary. He made way for her to enter and be seated. Observing her countenance, he realized something most important and upsetting had made her come to him at this hour. Joseph wondered what had happened to upset Mary. But there was not the slightest suspicion in his mind that there could be any serious problem. He gently and calmly welcomed her, tried to put her at ease and calm her trepidations. As he shared with her various incidents of the day in the town and in his shop, he gently urged her not to fear, but to freely share with him whatever was troubling her. All the while Joseph was talking, Mary was casting about in her mind, seeking a good way to begin her story. But nothing seemed to be suitable. Finally, desperately, for the words seemed terribly brutal as they came out of her lips, she blurted out, "Joseph, the other day, an angel from God came to me, and he told me God was going to visit me, and the Holy Spirit would come upon me and put a baby in my womb." "Nonsense, Mary," Joseph laughed with relief. "You were just dreaming, and that is all. Angels don't visit us nowadays, and especially not giving such a ridiculous message. You know we cannot get married just yet. I am trying to save up enough money so we can get married. I am working as hard as I can to make that blessed day come sooner. I know you are as much in a hurry as I am, but we must wait a little longer." "No, Joseph, you don't understand," Mary desperately cried out. "I tell you the truth. An angel did come to me, and he told me that the Holy Spirit would come upon me and put in my womb a holy baby from heaven. And Joseph, the Holy Spirit did come upon me. It has already happened. It was the most glorious and beautiful experience I have ever had in all my life. It was like being carried into the atmosphere of heaven itself. And Joseph, I am already really pregnant, and I'm going to have God's baby." A long, heavy silence reigned. With burning grief, Mary saw the glad light slowly fade out of Joseph's eyes as the truth of her story sank into his numbed brain. She saw the horrible unbelief reflected in his face. She watched the fright, then the pain, and finally unutterable grief slowly spread over his countenance. Without speaking a word, he silently arose, opened the door, and sternly ordered her to leave. He was speechless, shocked, stunned. He felt like he had been suddenly pushed over a precipice into the darkness of doom. This shattering realization he had to face alone. He could not trust himself to talk to her, and did not even want to look at her. Mary stumbled out of Joseph's door, out into what was to be her long, long night of bitter sorrow. Staggering, as one with a heart attack, she slowly, blindly made her way to her abode. There in the darkness of her unlit room on her small pallet of straw, Mary faced the ugly specter of hopeless reality. This terrible ogre of unbelief then would viciously stalk her life forevermore. No one, absolutely no one, would, or perhaps could, ever believe her unearthly story. All her hopes of merry bliss with her beloved Joseph crashed into broken shards of shattered dreams at her feet. At that time, Mary knew nothing about a cross or the agonies of crucifixion. She had no religious words of redemption storied for refuge. All she knew was the agony in her soul, as all unwanted, a cross had come, and she found herself crucified to the world, and the world unto her. God, she cried out, why have you forsaken me? You did not forewarn me that I would lose Joseph. The angel did not say that not even his love for me would make him believe in me, or believe in you either. And if Joseph could not believe me, then no one in this world will ever believe me. God, I don't blame him. I still love him and agonize for him. Honestly, I could not believe it myself if it had not already actually happened to me. Now I know that no one will believe me. What will happen to me? Will they stone me and your baby too? Tormented with thoughts spawned in hell, Mary sobbed out her grief in the long hours of darkness. However, that overshadowing presence had not left her. Tears of empathy from that presence fell upon her as assuaging comfort, and to her surprise, ere the dawn came, Mary slept. Truth or devilish deception? No sleep came, however, to the eyes of Joseph that night. His darling Mary had fallen into sin. That young lass, Mary, that had blossomed into a lovely flower before his eyes. The little girl he had watched grow up in the village and observed in all her various moods and had learned to love. But she had deceived him. Joseph thought he knew his lovely Mary well. He had never known her to lie, and she did not have the reputation of being a village flirt. Strong-willed she was, and he was glad, for he did not want a weak, fearful woman for his wife. Nevertheless, she was not openly rebellious. But now, Mary, where are you? You've gone away, and a stranger has taken your place. What have you done? Where have you gone? But how could his darling Mary fall into something so opprobrious as this? Such behavior was so completely out of character for her. How could she? How could she possibly do such a thing? Have I been deceived all these years about Mary? No, that is not possible, because I have observed her all her life. It must have been that she has been terribly deceived, he reasoned. An angel came to her, was her story. Ha! Angel indeed. Certainly no angel from God would have induced her to play the harlot. Only the devil himself would have deceived her by telling her that she was chosen by God to have a special baby, and a little naive Mary believed that deceiver. Or is it that she somehow became possessed with some evil spirit? Oh, but her face, It wasn't like an evil one. It seemed so pure, so holy, I could have thought she herself was almost an angel. I cannot get her face out of my mind. One thing for sure, it cannot be God that took Mary into such a pit of disgrace and defilement. Our Jehovah is not like that, because he loves purity and hates iniquity. But she was not an evil girl. Her whole life has been that of a young woman, clean and pure and innocent. She has never tried to tempt or seduce me. Not a gesture, a word, not the slightest insinuation has Mary ever used before me. So how on earth could she so suddenly turn and change and go out and play the harlot with some stranger? And more, who in this town has she been with? Mary has never been friendly with other young men. Nazareth is not an evil city for that kind of thing to happen suddenly and no one know anything about it. And the look on her face as she first told me, so exalted, not at all repentant, almost as if she really expected me to believe her story. Her face seemed almost, yes, almost angelic, and strangely enough, she was really hurt, and her face went white and grief-stricken when she found that I really could not believe her. How could my Mary do such a thing to me? He groaned again. Did some evil person somehow come upon her and manage to fill her with some rare potion, some poisonous drug that made her hallucinate and dream all this while? But who around here would do such a vile thing? We are Jews and keepers of the law. I know every man in this village, and I do not know one who would do such a heinous thing. Oh, God, he groaned. How? Why? My world is shattered into irreparable chaotic disaster. And now what can I do? I cannot marry her. She's defiled with some other man's child. I cannot lie to cover her, for much as I loved her, I could never love the child of some other person. If she would tell me the truth of her sin, instead of hiding behind a facade of angelic fanaticism, I would go out and kill whoever it was that defiled her. The terrible truth is, I still love her. Mary, Mary, how could you do this to me, to you, to us? I suppose now that the best I can do for her is to buy off the magistrate and the priest and send her away to some secret place and help her to hide her shame. The worst of it is that they will blame me. The people will drag my name in the dirt. I will probably lose my business and have to leave this, my city, forever. Oh, Mary, why did you come to me before this all happened? Mary, fatherless, motherless child that you are, so lovely, so attractive, and I thought, as in love with me as I am with you, what will you do now? Where will you go? How will you live? Who will take care of you? Do not think that I will. I will put you away, buy off the magistrate, lest they stone you, but more I will not do for you and your bastard child. Our dreams and our love, like a dead rose, has fallen under the foot of the trespasser. This will cost me a fortune, but there is nothing else I can do. I cannot believe her story. How could she be so deluded as to mix fantasy with reality and come to me with such a story as an angel and God's spirit sponsoring such dreadful things? I don't know. Night after night, Joseph wrestled with his nightmarish problem. Finally, he decided, there was no other way. He must go to the priest and the local magistrate and buy them off, send her away. For that was the unofficial but accepted custom amongst the people in those days when they were in such a terrible predicament. The only other alternative was for him to protest to the magistrate of her adulterous infidelity, and the magistrate, according to the law, would command to take her out and stone her. That I cannot and will not do, decided Joseph. If I could, I would admit it was my child, and then marry her. But it is not my child, and I dare not stand and lie before God and marry her and raise another man's child in my own home and live under the continual covering of an outrageous lie. No, there is only one way. I must buy off her punishment and send her away privately. And that was Joseph's final decision. While Joseph was struggling with his catastrophe and trying to find a way out of his dilemma, Mary, the Virgin, chosen to bring to earth the Holy Son of the Most High, was in the deep dungeon of disgrace and despair. The one she had believed would believe her absurd but true story, had rejected her irrevocably without a single word. Not even the ecstasies of her encounter with the Holy Spirit could now restore her shattered world or heal her crushed heart.